You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
Greetings, friends. It is Toilet of Hell Radio. I'm your host, Joe Thrashenkill. With me, I've got 365 Days of Horror, and we've got a hell of a show for you today. How good is this show, 365?
It is very good. It is excellently good.
It's picture an Italian chef kissing his fingers. That's how good it is. It's a good show.
Mwah.
Everybody, I am so beyond pleased that in the latter half of this podcast, I get to sit down with Jonah from Fucked Up. And if you're not familiar with Fucked Up, they are a Canadian punk band who has run the gamut across all music, from hardcore to like chamber pop to these huge psychedelic experimental records to... Man, just everything in the world. They're one of my favorite bands of all time, and I've been listening to them for like a decade now. So this was a really cool moment for me. So you'll hear us talk about reincarnation. You'll hear us talk about doing drugs. You'll hear us talk about library music, which is a concept I had never heard of before this interview, and it's super cool, super interesting. So you know. If you want to hear a really entertaining program of two chuckleheads dicking around, keep listening here. If not, skip forward to that interview. But for now...
Yeah, I wasn't on the show because of technical difficulties as I sat there staring at my cell phone for about half an hour waiting for the call. But I think people really like it even if they don't know Fucked Up, because despite being kind of like a hardcore punk band, they've always kind of done their own thing, and like you said, doing different styles, and they're actually an award-winning band. They've won awards for their albums, which is super cool. I actually know the band through vocalist Damian Abraham, who's like a super mega huge wrestling fan, and I've heard him on some podcasts I've listened to from Live Audio Wrestling. So definitely excited to hear
and,
that.
And Damian runs his own podcast as well called Turned Out a Punk, in which he interviews like lifers about like how they got into punk, like as kids. It's a really cool thing. So I love this band. I can't say enough good things about them. So it's a good interview. Please join us for that. In the meantime, 365, what's new in your world, man?
I went to a couple shows this week. Went out on a school night. I apologize, but I saw Ghost Bath earlier this week live. They were excellent. They didn't wear the white jumpsuits, though, so I know that disappoints you. They were in all black.
That is a little disappointing. You didn't just see this band, though. You performed with them. Is that correct?
I may have participated in some sort of capacity on stage with my own band. It was good. It was a lot of fun. One funny thing is we got there kind of early and the heat wasn't turned on the venue yet, so it was pretty cold. Just hung out most of the time wearing a zip-up hoodie and then went on stage to perform, and they had cranked the heat up in the meantime, and there was a heat vent like right on top of the stage, and there was heat coming from the lights up top and at the bottom of the stage, so it got very hot very quickly, so that was not pleasant. But overall, awesome show.
That sucks. I've played a show like that before where it was right on top of my head, and it's like, this is not how people can survive.
And a couple nights ago, I saw Amorphis and Swallow the Sun in a tiny, tiny venue. It was sold out, but there was only like maybe 70 people in this place. Also, excellent show. Swallow the Sun, I'm a big fan. They were great. Played a couple of old songs, real bummer time. And Amorphis played for like an hour plus, which is awesome if you love Amorphis. But if you're me and you're just a casual fan, it's like, okay, cool, they're playing this song. Play one of the 10 songs I know. But overall, it was really good. It's bitterly cold where I am right now, and we're expecting a blizzard in a couple days. So I'm kind of hunkering down as of right now.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, it's like 75 degrees outside here.
It's legitimately like maybe 15 degrees out right now here.
Barf. I went and saw a show on a school night as well. So, I mean, like...
Oh, we're bad kids.
I'm still cool. I still know how to party. I went and checked out Summerlands, the very great New York band run by Arthur Rizik, producer of many great bands, including Pissgrave and Power Trip. This is his trad metal project that I'm sure we have either played on this program before or I've written words about. Anyway, if you haven't read them or listened to them, you fucked up, son. Go check them out. And if you're so lucky that they actually come down to your state for a three-date tour, go check them out. Lots of things happened this week, and I feel like we are obligated to talk about things that happen involving people that we have devoted a lot of time to talking about on the show, or people that we've interviewed on this very show. You know, so this news story that happened is worlds be colliding in a way that that just really makes me genuinely happy inside. If you follow Chris Barnes on Twitter, which I do not because he still has me blocked, you'll see that earlier this week he kind of threw a subtle dig at a guy we all know and love, Jose Mangan. That is, of course, the guy behind SiriusXM's Liquid Metal and Octane, the butt rock channel. He tweeted earlier, hashtag, Paola is still alive and well in the music business. Hashtag, let the DJ sing on your album. Now, what happened here is that I'm sure that this has to be a reference, of course, to Suicide Silence hitting the top again on the countdown for most requested songs on Sirius Liquid Metal. The hashtag let the DJ sing on your album would be referencing our favorite golden-throated Mexican man actually singing on a track on the new Suicide Silence record. I haven't heard this because it sounds just god-awful to me. I don't like either one of those things one bit. Have you listened to it?
I didn't even know that he sang on the album. I think Chris Barnes did the metal world a service by letting us know with this super low-key subtweet. I don't even know what song Jose Mangan's on, but I am looking on YouTube right now for their first single they put out, Doris. As of right now, it has almost 17,000 upvotes and over 30,000 downvotes.
I have never been... interested in this band at all, even when it was still fronted by Mitch Lucker or Lurker, whatever his name was. I always thought it sounded like, you know, piss poor imitation of Cannibal Corpse. So I don't know why this band has so many, you know, rapt followers that care about them. But hey, here we are.
I think it has to do with being really one of the first bands, maybe not the first, but one of to kind of pioneer the deathcore sound, you know, the heavy breakdowns and the screeching, screaming, and, you know, the low gurgle vocals. I think just because they were there at the beginning and everyone else kind of followed, they had a new built-in audience. And now with the sound change, I think they're getting a massive backlash. And having this Jose Mangan thing involved, too, is just making it worse.
So the implication that Chris Barnes is making here, which he has since, of course, retracted, is that Suicide Silence would not be getting anywhere near the airplay that they're getting on SiriusXM were it not for the heavy thumb of Jose Mangan supporting them because he was actually on this record, which I believe. I had a subscription for a long time to SiriusXM. I listened to a lot of Liquid Metal, and I can say that authoritatively that the programming is garbage, and that's entirely the fault of Jose Mangan. He chooses what to play at pretty much at will, and it's generally speaking one of like six bands. So...
I just want to point out before we move on, I'm looking at some further tweets from Chris Barnes, and the PRP questioned him if he was subtweeting Suicide Silence, and he responded with, nah, just an observation, and then a kissy winky face, which is just incredible coming from Chris Barnes.
Yeah, God bless Chris Barnes. That's That's a pro move on his part.
This just makes me like him even more after our interview.
Same, man. And I'm glad that at least this dude is calling him as he sees him. Chris Barnes, he's been very candid about the fact that he is interested in selling records. So not having his 6 feet under anywhere on that countdown is definitely affecting him personally. So call him out, man.
I think we should get him to do a weekly column for us called like Shit Talking with 6 Feet Under and just have him rip on bands.
I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
We did crown a worst metal song of all time, which does beg the question, did you hear the one about me being a cuck?
Did you hear the one about me being a cuck? Yeah. I love this. I wrote up the post coronating Five Finger Death Punch as our user's choice of the worst song in all of metal of all time. Under It and Over It. Is that the one? Into It, Over It?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. It's not a good song, man. I feel like a couple of others might have probably deserved it over that, but I can't disagree with that result because it is a garbage ass song. I always enjoy when we write about a band that has bigger prominence than what we normally cover. The comments get flooded with randos that are super fans of these bands. I spent a paragraph calling out Five Finger Death Punch for essentially stealing Valor. Because none of these dudes have ever served in any capacity in the armed forces, and yet that is their whole aesthetic. They wear camo, hang out in the desert, wear dog tags, pretend that they're tough military dudes, and the fact is that they are not. None of them. There's not a shred of evidence that any of them have ever done that, and of course people came out of the woodwork to say, actually, I'm pretty sure that they served. No, you've been sold a bill of bullshit by their image. None of them have served.
They Five Finger Death Punch explained to you, like mansplaining, but like 10 times worse.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. That's always fun. We need to write about bigger mans more often, just so that I can see the quote unquote normies come through.
Well, it's free press for us. We might as well all shit talking Metallica all the time. And maybe Lars will notice a senpai.
Please. This is unrelated to anything. My girlfriend saw Some Kind of Monster for the first time ever this past week. And I think that she's never been a listener of Metallica or Megadeth or any of that shit. And now she just she gets it. I think she gets the complete frustration that the rest of us feel for these people now.
Well, better learn now than never.
Yeah, essentially. She's like, Lars is a bitch. I'm like, yes, yes.
Yes, we've been saying this for 30 years.
other things that have happened a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week and a half, time means nothing to me. I reported that South by Southwest, in their artist contract with Showcase Artists, they had a provision that basically said that they would report foreign bands to immigration authorities under fear of deportation if any of them broke their contract by playing an unofficial show when they're supposed to do an official South by Southwest showcase. In the time after that, it was revealed that this language had been in the contracts for a few years, actually, so this was not a brand new change. Due to pressure, South by Southwest actually removed the language from the contract starting, a week ago. In that time, though, a band that was supposed to play South by Southwest, the music portion, which starts, tomorrow, Pray for Joe, because it's terrible, it was actually deported. They were not allowed to get to Austin to play this set that they were supposed to do. This band, Soviet, which confusingly I believe is from Italy. It's kind of backwards, dudes. They were detained Wednesday in Seattle, they were turned away. They were detained and forced to leave the country. this is, I think, something that is going to be more of an issue with our stricter and stricter immigration standards set in place by that fucking asshole in the White House. So because the band didn't have a work visa, and which is why they were turned away, but it doesn't quite make sense because they weren't getting paid to do these shows. So a work visa would be unnecessary. You can use the visa waiver program for that. And immigration authorities decided that was not enough. So they had to go back to Italy. What do you make of this, man? Because I feel like this is going to be a pervasive trend for bands that, you know, already don't make any fucking money to come, you know, from foreign lands to the U.S. to tour. I think it's just going to be disastrous.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of confusion going on multiple fronts about what exactly should be happening, how things should be handled. I think lots of unqualified people have been put into roles of power dealing with either immigration or just people visiting. And there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions of just kicking people out of the country or, you know, jailing people, taking their phones, confiscating their stuff, and just going through everything. I think a lot of rights are getting thrown out of the window in the name of, quote, safety. And I think this is going to affect a lot of bands in the metal world, especially coming up in the next couple months. You know, we have Maryland Death Fest coming up. And, you know, there's always issues with international bands traveling to the United States just based on, like, even having all of the correct visa information. Things always seem to go wrong. This is going to get a lot worse, and it's going to get a lot louder, too.
Yeah, it is. It's a goddamn shame, man. Like, I live in a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood, and immigration authorities have been set up here for the last month and some change, just, like, waiting outside of schools, waiting in parking lots, setting up roadblocks, just so they can check papers, man, and, like, basically grab people when they're picking up their kids from school or trying to take them, you know, to the grocery store. It is dark. We are living in a very dark timeline. So this is, you know, we all love and care about musicians being able to see our favorite bands come through. But this is affecting, like, everyone. I don't know what to make of it. I wish I had an answer for how to offer some resistance for this, but I've got nothing, man.
And the best thing you could do as of right now is, I guess, vote during the midterms, as much as that might help. Also getting organized too.
But, you know, it's going to take a lot of mobilization throughout the United States. Midterms are coming up, and flip the House. That would change a whole lot.
And if that doesn't work, we always got hammers and bats. Punch more Nazis.
Always. Hey, speaking of which, did you see all these people getting kind of agitated this week online, getting nude and mad and red online?
Yeah, who put out this article again?
Yeah, the AV Club wrote about metal's problem with Nazis, which, you know, if you're, you know, pretty into extreme underground metal, you've encountered this in your life. And that's the thing. A lot of dudes who are really, really close to the subject kind of took offense to this, and that it's like you're just now knowing about this, or you're an outsider or a scene tourist looking for shit to stir up. I don't know, man. Like, it's, you and I realize that every week, like, oh, this band is, you know, fucked up, or this dude is a Nazi. Like, it's a pervasive thing. And not everybody is born with perfect knowledge of who's a Nazi and who's not.
Yeah, the list doesn't get smaller. The list gets larger every week. And it's weird. People were taking issue with, like, the title of the article, which is Metal Music Still Has an Unaddressed Nazi Problem. It's like, well, it's been addressed before. Let's move on. And it's like, well, like you said, not everyone's going to know each and every band that has shitty members, or they have side projects. They're 1488 or Sturmfuhrer. And it's a service to let people know that labels people like are putting out, you know, records of bands where they have these shady connections. I don't want to be reading some of this stuff, but I think it's important to know. You know, it's important to know that people in the genre of music I like, some of them have never met me, but they want me dead because of who I am and where my, you know, genetics come from.
And, you know, it's not like folks do this once and then they're pariahs forever. Like, there's always a second act. One of the primary artists that's referenced by this AV Club article is Craig Pillard of Dysma. Dysma, of course, has a new record coming out soon on Profound Lore, which is a record label that, you know, we like. They've got a lot of great bands. It's, you know, not... also not a record label that you would expect a guy that used to be really closely associated with satanic skinhead propaganda to put out a record on. So this is where we're at now. Craig Pillard has since, you know, kind of disavowed all of this work that he did under the name Sturmfuhrer. Nerdfuhrer. I can't pronounce. He's kind of disavowed it, but at the same time, like, have you really? Like, or is it just another case of, please don't ask me about this because I would like to sell records and I don't want to get kicked off another festival like I did with Chaos and Taos in 2013?
You can disavow it all you want, but at least me personally, I have a very long memory when it comes to this stuff. And, you know, I am not quick to forgive and forget.
I guess the thing that kills me is that there are literally, you know, 10 billion bands in metal, and a lot of really great ones that have nothing to do with Nazis at all, whatsoever. I have yet to hear a band with extremely, you know, fucked up views that I can't hear better or equal from somebody who doesn't feel that way, you know? Dysma is okay. Perfectly serviceable death metal band. That's it. If you want a perfectly serviceable death metal band, good news. Your options are wide open, man.
Just go on Metal Archives, search death metal, and you'll be able to find something just as good, if not better, and hopefully with not as much baggage.
I mean, it's easy, man. It's, you know, just read Toil of Hell. We've got good things. We know good things. Listen to
us.
Most of the time. I think we ought to call it. I think we ought to get into this interview with Fucked Up and let these folks get about their day.
All right, let's get fucked up.
Together to the back and come down, racing up the pure and pure.
This is Jonah from Fucked Up. How's it going?
Jonah, thanks so much for joining us today. Your latest entry in the Chinese Zodiac series is called Year of the Snake, which is a long, winding psychedelic track that kind of travels the samsara cycle. Reading the lyric sheet, it seems like this is a song that explores the acceptance of death. And looking at the press release that came with it, it also mentions a lyrical theme that is the spiritual usage of psychedelics. How do these things come together for you?
The spiritual usage of, sorry, you cut out for 2 seconds there.
Oh, the spiritual usage of psychedelics.
Oh, right. Well, I think that the idea of death and really the way the music unfolds in the song alongside the lyrics is it's kind of non-linear. It doesn't entirely follow the verse chorus pattern. So in that way, it really immediately the form takes you on this journey somewhere. A lot of the time, psychedelic music anyway, the idea of psychedelic music gets wrapped up in this kind of feedback loop of maybe like of jamming, like the idea that thinking on one topic is the way to sort of spiritually free yourself or move yourself. But it's really, that's a little bit too lifelike in a way. It's sort of repetitive, or not lifelike, but it's just a little too conscious, you know.
Interesting.
It just, you couldn't predict where this song would go, and from where it begins and where it ends musically. I mean, it's like the whole idea is about being transcended, and also when the way the music unfolds as well lends itself to sort of having a brief understanding of where you are and then having your world changed instantaneously.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? The track itself musically, as you mentioned, goes completely different places. There are pan flutes at one point, and then at another point there's what sounds an awful lot like heavy metal riffs. It's how do you find that working within your life? How does that jibe with you?
Well, I think particularly the section of the song where the heavy metal guitars comes in, that this is the point to me where the song arc, as a listener, I find myself sort of understanding what's happening in the song at that moment. The song reaches a climax and it gets you to a familiar territory, especially something familiar with Fucked Up. And so the gesture of these heavy metal guitars and big drums and then extremely loud vocals, you sort of feel all of a sudden confident that you understand the context of what you're a part of at that moment. But then right after that, and this can maybe speak to the sort of psychedelic aspect, you know, part of like some psychedelic experience is sort of thinking that maybe something's over or that you're normal again, and then understanding that actually you've got a long way to go. And so that musically, that moment I think is the perfect disruption of understanding, and that's the kind of parallel with maybe a psychedelic experience and maybe with death. You feel like your life should come to a climax when you die, and then all of a sudden you understand actually. And a long way to go and a lot to pass through before you can conclude or come to some kind of resting point of peace, maybe.
Do you personally believe in reincarnation?
I'm not sure that I do. I try, and my sort of perspective is like a sort of debased humility and a kind of, I guess, Zen. People, when I tell people about this, they tell me that it has something in common with Zen Buddhism and. But I don't think about reincarnation ever. I sort of consider it to be a kind of, and you just reach a point of understanding where the sort of conflicts of your consciousness dissolve. So I don't know if that means that you can come back as a chestnut, or if it's with theoretically fewer problems other than birds and hedgehogs, or if it just means that you get to completely lose consciousness, and that's a kind of peace. So, I don't know.
That's an interesting way to put it. I've never considered simply ceasing to realize that you exist is basically the same as not existing.
Yeah, and I think that in living, this is going to sound really hokey, and I don't mean to get so heavy this early in the day, but I think it's good to sort of come to things from a place where maybe you just understand that you can at the same time as existing. You know, you can really remove yourself. I think it's a valuable kind of humility to put yourself in that position, at least for some times.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a control freak. That seems incredibly difficult.
Yeah, there you go. Well, just imagine the amount of control you'd have if you didn't have to control anything. You know, it's like tenacity of your own life in a way. Just sort of, I hate to simplify it, but it's not like sarah sarah, whatever will be me. That's quite passive. This is like an active kind of. An act of humility and an act of calming and an act of debasing your ego, maybe. So
I mean, it's deeply interesting stuff. And I guess it makes it doubly more so interesting that fucked up in you know, your 15-year career of this band. It's began as a more straightforward hardcore band, and since then, you know, you've progressed to these. Concept art rock records and fake compilations and Christmas songs and along the way doing these experimental Zodiac records. What inspires these records? Listen to a ton of John McLaughlin and yeah, put it all right. Together.
Well, I think that, you know, bands that stay together for a long time, everybody's tastes become divergent, but the project always works towards the same thing. And, you know, progress is usually marked by refining your style. Whereas the tastes and personalities of this band and the amount of, you know, almost you could say impatience, the principal creative people to sort of stick with the same thing has led to these explorations. And I think the thing we've realized in doing all of these other projects along the years is that Fucked Up was sort of, I think, always meant to come at established things from the wrong angle and from like the wrong position, like not a position of confidence, but more of a position of a challenge or of one-upsmanship or something. So it's like, well, you know, lots of the things that we've done, there's a precedent for, like library music and Christmas singles by punk bands. So that's like, you know, that's kind of on script. But the more experimental stuff, I think, is just about and then ought to try and do that. And you, the royal you as listeners, are sort of get to have experienced the learning process of a band towards finding their feet in these worlds, you know. And it's like the more that we practice it, the less it becomes a platonic form, and the more it becomes ours, you know.
Makes sense. And when you say going at things at the wrong angle, I mean, obviously you're starting off at a disadvantage just simply with having the name Fucked Up.
Yeah. It's,
so basically you're playing pinball blindfolded.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just think, you know, that again, that was always the challenge. Like the band, nobody really knew each other very well when we got together as a band. And already that's a kind of disruption of the way most people would consider forming a band, especially at the small level of Fucked Up. I mean, I lots of people form bands that way too, but it's like, okay, we're going to do people that have nothing in common. Step one. Step two. Okay, well, we've managed to make this music. Let's try and do the thing that we don't know how to do. Step two. And then, and so on and so on and so on. And so, you know, part of that has manifested itself kind of fractally from being about a personality, from being about characteristics like playing really melodic pop music with really aggressive vocals. And then, you know, calling ourselves or core canon, but playing songs that are 24 minutes long and have pan flutes and, you know, exotic percussion. So I think that propagating that idea of wrongness is kind of the perfect filter through which to view a lot of Fucked Up's activity.
So Year of the Snake is the eighth release in the Zodiac series. Do you already have the rest of the Zodiac planned out? And what will you do when the final Joker card is revealed, so to speak?
We don't have the rest of them planned out. We're just trying to keep them on schedule, really, which it never is. But we've been working on Horse a little bit, which is the next one. And then, I don't know, I really cynically for a long time have wanted, because like all of the animals that so far in the Zodiac cycle we've covered have had like, you know, easy connections to metaphor and things to write about, you know, dragon, snake, ox, tiger, dog, pig, like, you know, these are all animals that you can put human characteristics onto, of course you can do it with all of them, and hare was like a little bit jumpy, you know, it's like getting a little bit less beastly for the purposes of like a big loud band. But I'm really interested to see what we come up with for Year of the Chicken or something. I wish that we could write like a 9-second song or like a 3-second song. Year of the Chicken.
If you would but do the full the full 12-inch release of that would be outstanding.
Yeah, we want to give Napalm Death a run for their money on You Suffer.
You're a chicken, but why?
You're a chicken, but why? Whoa, okay. We never had this conversation. I had the idea first.
I fully support this endeavor. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Sounds like a legally binding contract to me.
Yeah, it does. Just put me in the liner notes, please.
Yeah, you got it.
You know, as the world seems to descend further into outright nationalism and extreme right-wing rhetoric, do you have any interest in creating music that goes back to the more straightforward messages of the early days?
I think that our messages were never particularly straightforward, first of all. But, like, unless you mean, like, the early days of punk about, like, with state power and things like that. What do you mean the early days?
Yeah, I'm thinking back to, like, Police and No Pas Iran.
I think that,
7 Inches.
Those topics and those motifs, I think, do get written about and will get written about in Fucked Up's lyric, but they won't ever have the same – they might not ever have the same directness that they did then, or maybe they will. And I think – I know this is like such a contemporary answer because I'm flip-flopping like crazy. You know, this is like de rigueur for any answers. Like, will you address this issue? And I'm like, well, maybe we will, maybe we won't. I can imagine a world in which Fucked Up sort of returns to form and streamlines, but I imagine that context will not be about nostalgia and will not be about recapturing something, but more about moving energy in the way that we want to sort of like move it again. And I think, you know, some of the new material that's been batted around is really hard and really straightforward, and it's gonna seem like a return to form, but it's more the idea that energy has always been there, and by clearing out some of the noise, we can push it back. But I mean, I think that these times are so crazy that the time for people to be poetic and metaphorical about their positions on heinous right-wing politics and racism and things like that, the time to be poetic and be gentle with the assumption that everything will still be okay is now a time where you better speak your mind and put your foot down, or else things are going to get truly awful, you know? I think that that's the world right now. It's not just a band's job. And I think that assuming that because the most powerful government in the world is led by a lunatic, assuming that that's going to create good music is wrong. I think it's going to create a better psyche for people that are level-headed and understand the way the world ought to work, you know? And I think it's not the job just of bands to have that discourse. And, you know, punk is probably not the most political music in the world now, you know? A better and more political expression of music doesn't always have to come from kinds of voices. It should come from many voices, other people who have experienced things firsthand, you know, not just in the sort of, we're comfortable, but we want to yell about it too. We're on your side. It's like, no. Anyway, I don't know, I'm rambling. Maybe you can cut that into a sentence that adds up.
No, I think I get what you're saying, though. Like, for the majority of the history of punk, it's been dominated mostly by young white dudes who, you know, traditionally speaking, don't receive the brunt of these forces that are working against people of color and the impoverished. So the idea is...
It's not to say that, like, those voices are not valid, you know? Like, lots of people have had a hard time and have been singled out by police, but it's like at this day and in this day and age, it's become clear that, you know, the people that are suffering the most and the kind of music that is expressing that we need to push forward is not necessarily coming from, like, the five white dudes in a band and women women, you know, whole other dimension of understanding, you know, when you bring the female perspective into protest and marginalization, and it's like everything is just so much more available for the complexity of the problem now. You know, returning to simplicity is part of the problem. People are trying to return to simplicity, so to have political music do that is problematic. The problems aren't simple any longer. You know, they need to be. They're complex. They're multiplicitous.
You know, in addition to your countrymen in Propagandhi, I would say that Fucked Up has inspired a whole bunch of people to learn about and participate in these ground causes. What's the deal with Canada? Why are you guys good at this?
We're focus. You know, we're not the ones on the hot seat. We can be the ones that react. And you know, Canada is not a. It seems utopian, but it's not perfect. It's far from perfect. And, you know, these problems exist here too. But, you know, as always, we have been in the position to be the kind of more level-headed and calm neighbor. We have a relatively small, have as much global influence as other countries in the world or economic influence. We just have natural resources and like a sparsely populated huge land mass, you know. It's like we're privileged enough to be able to be calm and cool headed. But I don't know. Maybe we're not good at it. I mean, there's lots of nasty policy coming out of Canada. We've become like a rogue petro state. All the oil sands and pipelines, the wreckage of natural habitat, and you know, we're full of bullshit too.
Yeah, it's as you mentioned. It seems to be truly a global phenomenon.
And you know, to just speak to the political aspect of Fucked Up, you have to hand it to, you know, like Damien and Josh have always had a very real and very real time consciousness of things happening and communities that exist around us, and a real desire to bring them into and help use whatever momentum Fucked Up has to sort of reach out and bring things into the momentum. And you know, we're not going to make or break these problems, but it speaks to their level of good conscience and like excellent foresight that we've been able to participate in as much as we have.
That's awesome. Maybe on a little bit lighter note, you've got some shows coming up, and I like to ask what you're going to be listening to as you're traveling to them.
Because we're traveling to where? Sorry.
You've got some shows coming up. What are you going to be listening to?
Yeah, we're going out to the West Coast. I'm in school right now. Actually, I'm doing a master's degree in composition, and I'm going to be listening to like kind of weird avant-garde classical music to try and get ideas, and then also the steady diet of classic punk and hardcore obscure music that didn't make it out in one piece until now, when all the attention came to it. Unless you want like an exact playlist,
you know, just you should share something with us that our audience might not have ever heard of before.
Okay, all right, so get this. This band called The Johnnies from New Zealand, and they have a great single called Who Killed Johnny. It's from the late 70s. It's an independent release. I've been listening to that a lot lately, and I will probably listen to it again, as well as there's a thing called Anthem de pour violon Pierre Boulez, who's a French composer from the 20th century. I think he's dead now. Might not be. Sorry, Pierre, if you're still alive. And it's the second. It's like a sequel. It's an interesting thing. So Anthem 1 was just a solo violin piece. And then 6 years later, he rewrote the piece for solo violin and electronics. And this is like at the onset of the in music, at least in, or no, it's not to say the onset, because they've been using tape loops and oscilloscopes and things like that in classical music forever. But this is like, you know, turning over a new leaf in the late 90s. This Anthem 2 is from 1997, and he was working at some French Institute of Technology, like the equivalent of an experimental laboratory to manipulate sound and also to root electronics. And he devised this software, played it, reacted to what the soloist was playing, and put it in different intervals and made it delay, but it was always reacted the same way. Like, it composed a piece that it played by itself only if the violin played the piece at the same time. It's kind of an interesting concept. Huh. And what it did is it tonally changed the whole thing, and it made it 2.5 times as long. So I'm really interested in that piece of music. So I've been listening to that.
That sounds fascinating. I want to check into that. You know, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about Davidstown, which was kind of a limited release that you did a few years back in 2011, which was essentially a compilation made up for place setting for your full concept record that came out at the time. And it's made entirely of fake bands to give color to the area. How did that come about?
It came about through record collecting. There's it came out through record collecting and also through the idea of library music, production music. So there's lots of library music and production music out there. And if you go to a lot of record stores, there'll usually be a section where you can get these LPs that you would have, this movie that would have, this music that you would, it would have been on the background on a television show or a radio drama that's usually created by one person or one group of people and sold outright for usage. And there's one in particular that's kind of known in punk circles called Badly Bruised and Slightly Stoned. Sorry for blowing up everybody's spot. Cheap record was until this interview. And it's like fake punk. It's fake punk from the 70s in England. And it's meant to be for, like, you know, they noticed that punk was catching on in punk library music record so that they could use it for whatever television special they were doing without having to pay royalties to the actual bands. And so it sort of came from there. We decided, well, let's do a record of fake bands. So it's all the same musicians on every one of these tracks on Badly Bruised and Slightly Stoned, but they're all different band names, and they all have slightly different styles. And then there's a brief descriptor under each one, like which outlines the ways you could use it, like upbeat punky number, fighting, dancing, jovial, slightly confrontational, you know, things like that.
I'm still to this day a huge fan of the fake band Grain that you made for this. Oh. Very much like vein of vintage Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, that was the idea. Exactly. Yeah, so we tried to find people that matched the styles. And yeah, we just wanted to write a lot of music and make it like a
Sorry, what was that? I think it just cut out just for a second.
Someone in the background's playing AC/DC.
Is there anything that you wanted to share with our audience about this record or about your band? Anything that you think that they need to know?
Keep guessing. That's all you need to know.
I think that's great advice. Thank you so much, Shona, for talking with me today.
All right, take it easy. Bye.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.